and welcome to the Super High Yield Anesthesia Podcast, the second edition. This is your host, Scott, the anesthesia resident. Thanks for tuning in to the Super High Yield Anesthesia Podcast. So today, we'll continue our series on acute pain management, and we'll talk about perioperative non-opioid infusions for postoperative pain today. This one's is actually going to be pretty short, so hopefully we can just breeze through this and give you high yield information. But the main ones that we're going to talk about today in terms of the different infusions you can use for postoperative pain is ketamine, lidocaine drips, naloxone, magnesium, and alpha-2 agonists, so things like clonidine and dexmedetomidine or Precedex. Okay, so with all that said, let's just go ahead and get started. So the first thing is one of my favorite drugs to use for patients, not for myself. I have not gone on a spirit journey myself, but it's fun to watch my patients go through that. But anyways, so the mechanism of ketamine, very high yield for boards, is NMDA receptor antagonism. And is also a sodium channel blocker. So ketamine is available as a racemic solution, so S plus and R minus stereoisomers. I totally forgot if that's how you actually say it because it's been a while since like OCHEM, but yes, S plus and R negative. S plus is 4 times greater affinity for the NMDA receptor than R negative. And that's a fun fact because I didn't see that part in boards. But anyways, the half-life for ketamine is about 80 to 180 minutes. And the main metabolite from ketamine is going to be norketamine. And norketamine is interesting because it actually has a longer half-life than ketamine. And it's a third as potent as the parent compound. And you'll see that there's analgesic effects at plasma concentrations of 100 to 150 nanograms per milliliter. So as with any drugs, there are pros and cons. So pros of using ketamine is one, it does not suppress cardiovascular function, assuming you have an intact nervous system. It does not depress laryngeal protective reflexes. It has less depression and respiration compared to opioids or even things like benzodiazepines. And it's beneficial for opioid-tolerant patients. So even in acute pain setting, if all opioids have not been working, you can always try a ketamine infusion. But anyways, so those are the pros. Cons of ketamine is that it does cause postoperative malaise. It has its possibility of accumulating metabolites, as we kind of discussed, as norketamine. You could develop tolerance to ketamine. You could have cardiovascular excitement. If a patient has severe coronary artery disease, you do not want to give any ketamine. Okay, so ketamine also has increased salivation, so you have an increased risk for laryngospasm. The patients get super juicy. Generally, what I do is I give a little bit of glycopyrrolate, a little bit before I plan on extubating, just to kind of help dry them up a little bit, and I'm very thorough when it comes to suctioning. Next is the psychomimetic effects. So basically, you can give them a very bad trip. And I haven't looked this up myself, but there's been successful litigations where patients had PTSD or something with when they were given ketamine. So we are going to try to avoid getting sued by giving them Versed. That's generally what I do for patients that have used ketamine for. As long as they have Versed on board, it kind of helps counteract the psychomimetic effects and the bad trips. And lastly, a con for it is not exactly a con, but it does not appear to help with post-amputation pain. Okay, so for dosage-wise, this is what I generally do, and it seems to be kind of institution dependent. But at the beginning of the case, I would give a bolus of ketamine, so 0.5 to 1 milligrams per kilo. Generally, I just do half, so 0.5 milligrams per kilo. Then after that, you start an infusion and it kind of varies as well. So somewhere between 40 to 100 milligrams per kilo per hour. And then usually what I do is I stop the infusion about an hour before exacerbating, kind of just reduce the, or try to reduce the incidence of the bad trip. Okay. And you can also use ketamine in epidural analgesia. So you try to do 3 milligrams every hour. So the types of surgeries with the most evidence of benefit using ketamine for analgesia is abdominal surgery, pelvic surgery, so things like gynecologic or urologic procedures, spine surgeries, and in a PCEA. Okay, so that's ketamine. Next is lidocaine. So the beneficial properties of lidocaine is that it decreases albumin extravasation, inhibits leukocyte migration and metabolic activation. So as we kind of discussed in a previous episode, when you reduce the amount of inflammation, it actually decreases the cascade and decreases sensitization of the pain, basically the pain neurons to polarizing and causing more pain, right? So another benefit for lidocaine is it modifies the neuronal response in the dorsal horn. And lastly, it suppresses synaptic spinal transmission by decreasing C fiber evoked activity in the spinal cord. So regarding dosage, you usually can give a bolus about 100 milligrams or 1.5 milligrams per kilo. And usually, if you're going to use this throughout the case, the normal dose for with lidocaine at induction for a propofol is usually enough as a loading dose. And from there, you can use an infusion of 2 to 3 milligrams per minute or 2 milligrams per minute for patients less than 70 kilos. The types of surgery that's been studied with lidocaine drips with benefit are abdominal surgeries and pelvic surgeries. But types of surgeries without good evidence are things like total hips and cabbages. Oh no, my cabbages. For all you Avatar fans. Apparently, the new live action's coming out on Netflix soon. So check that out. There you go. Free publicity. Next is naloxone. So this is kind of counterintuitive because you would think naloxone would reverse any sort of opioids, but here we are. They actually use naloxone as analgesic. I was so confused once when I was in the pain clinic and the patient said that she was on naloxone, and I was so confused. I thought she had something like a mistake or something, because I was like, you know, naloxone is the thing to reverse any opioids. And then she looked at me like I was an idiot. In fact, I was an idiot because it was prescribed as an analgesic by the pain doc. So yeah, that was cool. Anyways, so regarding the mechanism for naloxone, as you already know, it's a pure mu receptor antagonist. The benefits of using naloxone is a decreased incidence of nausea, vomiting, respiratory depression, and urinary retention after epidural and intrathecal opioids. The main purpose in its use now, contrary to my story, that part I'm still kind of so iffy about, but the main purpose of using naloxone is to control the side effects from neuroaxial opioids. But apparently, small doses of it could produce analgesia, while larger doses could produce hyperalgesia, because, you know, you're reversing everything else. So the proposed mechanism of the naloxone as an analgesic is it releases endorphins or displaces endorphins from receptor sites, and it causes augmentation of activity of opioid receptors. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. Normally you think of naloxone as a reversal agent, but in some cases you can give it as an analgesic and I guess more primarily use to control side effects due to the opioids. Okay, next is magnesium. So mechanism of action for this one is NMDA receptor antagonism. It minimizes perception of duration of pain, and it cause, and also has a synergistic effect of ketamine. So if you recall from our previous episode on pain receptors, that really long one with different, anyways, our discussion on that, one of the things that has happened for NMDA receptor to be like to activate is for magnesium to be displaced. So essentially, if you have more magnesium, you're basically increasing more, putting more stopcocks in the different receptors. So then it reduces the rate of the receptor from activating, right? And as we discussed earlier in this episode, ketamine is also an NMDA receptor antagonist. So if you use both of these together, it has the synergistic effect. So assuming I have an extra pump, I usually give both of these drugs together, magnesium, ketamine. Okay, so dosage-wise, you give like an initial loading bolus of 30 to 50 milligrams per kilo. And after that, you use an infusion, 10 to 15 milligrams per kilo per hour. Last one we're going to talk about, this can be a super short episode, is alpha-2 agonist. So the mechanism of action, as you already know, is a stimulation of two adrenal receptors in the CNS spinal cord, or did I write that wrong? Basically, okay. So, it stimulates the two adrenal receptors. So it causes a sympatholytic effect. And the interesting thing is it could also potentiate analgesic effects from opioids. So the ones that we'll actually talk about today is just briefly talk about is dexmedetomidine or Presidex. So the dosage for this one is going to be the loading bolus of 1 mic per kilo. And from there, you run an infusion of 0.2 to 1 milligram per kilo per hour. The side effects for Presidex are things like sedation, bradycardia, and hypotension. But if you have the time, I highly recommend you to take a look at an ACRAC episode regarding using dexmedetomidine / Presidex in epidurals and spinals for OB. That's actually with some of my attendings, Doctors Michael Douglas and Doctors Leonard Sonic. So yeah, so it's really fascinating. From my experience from using Presidex and intrathecal injections and epidurals, and it's awesome. It's like one of my favorite drugs. When you give intrathecal Presidex, usually I just give like a relatively low dose, 4 mics, and it's awesome. It gives you like a dense block. And if you're doing it, like say you're doing a CSC for a patient or something, then like that's during labor, almost like completely takes away the pain. And like when the Presidex starts wearing off, they think that the pain, the epidural is not working, but it's mainly because the Presidex was just that good. And even like where you're topping off an epidural for a C-section or something, so you generally we use a lidocaine with some bicarb in it. But we give a little bit of, or at least I do, a little bit of Presidex as well. And that kind of helps have a faster onset for analgesia, and it helps with pain as well. Oh, and also the great thing about intrathecal Presidex, especially if you're doing like a C-section or something, is like, say, for example, a patient has a history of multiple prior C-sections, and then they have other multiple risk factors for one, like a longer surgery, and two, so basically, the patient has risk factors for being a difficult C-section. So sometimes the spinal local anesthetics could wear off, but then if you get Presidex, you can pretty much extend that bad boy for a longer time. And if the patient's being admitted anyways, you know, it's great. So you don't have to convert to general once the local anesthetic wears off. Okay, but that's another episode, and definitely take a look at that ACRAC episode regarding this topic. So shout out to my attendings. Great job. Okay, that's pretty much it for this one. It looks like we're sub 20 minutes. Yay, like the original episodes and the original podcasts. So anyways, so the fun fact I have for you today is that humans are closer in time to Tyrannosaurus Rex than Tyrannosaurus Rex is to the Stegosaurus. The Stegosaurus, the one with like the spiny plates on the back, I guess, lived 155 to 150 million years ago, while the last T-Rex lived about 66 million years ago. So, okay, here's another fun fact. Because you know, like Jurassic Park, the main, I guess, anti-hero, I guess, antagonist, turns out, anyways, was T-Rex in Jurassic Park, right? But they didn't exist in the Jurassic period. It was like more of a Cretaceous thing. Yeah, you like that? Bam, history or science, I don't know, something. But anyways, so that's pretty much it. If you have the time, I would really appreciate you leaving a rating on Spotify or whatever you're listening to this podcast, and leave a comment. I would love to hear from you, especially in ways I can improve, or, you know, things that you kind of want to hear, especially if it's things like the residency life, that kind of thing. Those are actually a little bit easier than these episodes because there's less preparation I have to do, because for these ones I have to like actually read, take notes, which takes forever for me, and then record, et cetera, et cetera. Versus if it's like talking to my co-residents or whatnot, I'm able to kind of just pump that out really quick. Okay. Regarding credits, this show was written and produced by myself. The main source for this information in this episode is from Benzin's Essentials of Pain Medicine, 2017 fourth edition. And specifically chapter 12. And intro music was by Brian Teal. All right, so that's about it for this episode. Hope you have a good rest of your day. This is Scott, the anesthesia resident, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.